Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what do you do when you spend your childhood in a haunted house? Night after night, tormented by the dead returning from the grave. Today, we hear a shocking true story of a childhood haunted house.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your Real Ghost Story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is! 855-853-4802 is the phone number. Write in at realghoststoriesonline.com and press subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us right now. Just take a second, do it, press it, then you get all the episodes as we make them right there on your device. If you want them even sooner than how we release them to the public, get them in advance and ad-free, and get hooked up with an EPP bonus episode every week. That's a bonus episode of the show, specially produced with a soundtrack and all. You can get that at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to all of that stuff and helps support the show and keeps us on the air. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again. And how are you this fine day, Carol?
Well, Tony, I'm pretty good. Thank you for asking.
I'm glad to be. This is airing at the beginning of February, but this is the first time we've been doing a show together back on in 2020. And I said to Jen the other day, you know, we were joking about Barbara Walters last time we talked, and this is 2020, and I thought I was being so unique and kitsch with it.
It was everywhere.
It was fucking everywhere. I was like, God damn it. Yeah, so.
Everybody took my idea.
I know, it seems like we just kind of jumped on the bandwagon, and we're like, nope, we're actually doing that like a month before. So, anyway. I was surprised how many people really remembered it, to be honest. You know, I knew like some would, but.
Well, because the show was only on for like 50 years.
I know, but it just, I don't know. There's so many cultural references to news programs. You know, that's not that common unless you're a dork, but well, I know we are, but I didn't realize that many other people were. So.
They did that funny bit on CNN Live with Sherry O'Terry, came back from Saturday Night Live. Did you see that?
She did
the whole Barbara Walters thing. It was pretty funny.
I saw her.
I think Anderson Cooper was drunk.
I saw her with Anderson Cooper because that's the one I watch every year. And it was
because they are drunk. Good. It's kind of a train wreck.
It was good.
Waiting to happen at any moment.
It is. You know, it's not as much of a train wreck as it was with Kathy Griffin. And I do miss, I miss the utter train wreck that Kathy was just because then you really didn't know what would happen. But I got to say, Anderson and Andy have really in the last 3 years, they got a pretty fun show on New Year's Eve. I prefer to watch that rather than Carson Daly or whatever else on any of the other networks. I think it's more fun and laid back, and I like that one. I watched the whole thing from like 8 o'clock till midnight this year, and I enjoyed it.
Impressive.
Yeah. It's been kind of our thing. It's like, gotta watch Anderson Cooper. And so, yeah, I like the CNN New Year's.
What I like about that is that Anderson Cooper is someone you see as a news guy, so you don't always see his personality. Mm-hmm. So you get to kind of see who he is that one night a year.
That's the fun thing. It's that kind of seeing behind the curtain of, you know, because everybody has, you know, the view of news people or any really public figure of here's how they are, you know, and you kind of, you know, behind the scenes, it's a little different, you know, and it's, I think we all kind of have that voyeuristic interest in folks. So, that's a good one.
Tony and I behind the scenes are really boring.
Pretty much the same fucking people you hear on the air. So
exactly.
Nothing new to see
nothing
here.
Nothing to see here.
And I think that's true because it's funny. Even when we meet people, they're like, you guys are really pretty much the same. Yeah, we really are. it's nothing different here. So anyway, into 2020, happy 2020, happy February, everybody. It's almost Valentine's Day by the time this airs. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Of course, write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Let's jump over to our first story of the episode. It says, hey, love the podcast my kids asked to put on while we're driving, which I'm happy to do, especially since they chronically roll their eyes if I put on another podcast about Bigfoot. I wanted to share a story from last Christmas. I was very close to my pop-up Ted, or pop-up Ted. I didn't meet him until I was 12 years old, as he had not been the best father to my mom and her sister. They'd been estranged for 15 years until finally reconciling. He was a character, very set in his ways after years of bachelorhood, but had a dry sense of humor that made him an entertaining guy to be around. In his remaining years, he tried very hard to make up for his past mistakes and was very much loved by the entire family. He lived alone in a house that made us all, aunts, uncles, cousins, etc., extremely uncomfortable. Even the pop-up had enough unsettling things happen to him in the house that he chose to sleep on the kitchen floor instead of one of his four bedrooms. He always joked that if something came for him, the back door was right there. We all experienced lights going on and off on their own, heard footsteps throughout the house, and many people saw a figure of a woman who greatly resembled my grandmother, who had passed away when my mom was just 7 years old, walking down the hallway. The overwhelming feeling in the house was heavy, and like you were being watched. None of us kids would stay alone in the basement ever, even though that's where the game room and all the good snacks were. The basement, feeling there, is just awful. The unsettling feeling wasn't exclusive to the house, but extended into the backyard all the way down through the woods until you reached the creek that ran at the back edge of the property. We all loved her pop, but his house was not a place we liked to visit. Papa passed away when I was in my early 20s. I'm 49 now, and it's been quite a few years. He'd been ill for some time, but true to form was stubborn and not a compliant patient. It was a battle to get him to his doctor's appointments and then usually a waste of time because he never listened to them or took the medications. On the day he passed away, I was a person that he had called. He wanted me to come pick him up to take him to the hospital because he had been having fainting spells. I knew it was bad if he was asking to go to the emergency room. He lived an hour away. So I called an ambulance to his house, but he was already gone. By the time they arrived, just minutes later, he'd passed away on the kitchen floor in front of his fireplace, which was the same place he slept every night. We were devastated. The house was left alone for months due to the general sadness of being there and because we were all scared to death of the place. When it did get cleaned out, we went en masse seriously. It was in groups of at least four people so that we all had a partner in whatever room we were packing up. And we were never there past sunset. My mom and her sister eventually sold the house as no one in the family had any interest in living there. Fast forward to Christmas of 2018, my mom was going through things at her house and decided to gift me the American flag that had been presented to her pop-up at his funeral. He had served during World War II and had military honors at his service. Of his six grandkids, I had been closest to him, and she knew I would appreciate having it. I cried when opening it Christmas morning. The flag was framed and had a small plaque with his name and birth death dates on it. My husband hung it over our family room fireplace mantle so that it had a prominent place in our house. Several nights later, I came downstairs to sleep on the sofa in the family room thanks to the combined snoring from the dogs and another human in my bed. It was probably close to 1 a.m. I flipped the TV on for some background noise and fell back to sleep quickly. I awoke sometime later to the overwhelming sensation that something was near the end of the sofa where my head was watching me. I was instantly frozen with fear, unable to move, and utterly terrified. I did not want to open my eyes because I absolutely knew something was there and I didn't want to see it. Seemed like it was hours that I laid there like that, but I'm sure it was no more than several minutes. And then I felt something touch my hand. My eyes opened at what must have been their own accord because I knew my brain was telling them to stay shut. And I saw my pop-up's arm, or more accurately, just part of the elbow, down to his hand. I knew it was him because he was wearing one of his favorite blazers, the golden mustard brown corduroy one, with three brown leather buttons on the cuffs. The arm was not a solid form as I could see through it, and it faded at the top where his elbow should have been, but I was absolutely seeing it and absolutely feeling his hand on mine. He had very distinctive hands. They were incredibly large and calloused from years of hard work repairing industrial boilers, and it was without a doubt his hand rubbing the back of mine as I laid there. My fear evaporated immediately. I knew this was my pop-up, and that he was just letting me know that he was okay. All I could do was cry, because I missed him. I awoke later that morning with just a sense of sadness. I called my mom to share what had happened, and she said that she had dreamed about him just the night before. It was the first time that it happened in many years. My mom has always worried about what had happened to him after he passed. He had struggled with being a good father person as a younger man, and she bears the scars from her childhood still to this day. They had a difficult relationship. Several months after his death, she had a dream about him, where he came to her and said that he wasn't quite ready to be in heaven, and that he was okay but had a few things that he needed to work on. I don't know if having his flag brought him to me that night, but I just think it had something to do with what happened. I'm hoping that between my visit and my mom's dream, he was just letting us both know that he was finally ready to go to his next and final step. And now I throw it to Carol, who's probably crying a little bit.
I know. That made me super emotional.
Deep breath. Exhale.
Okay, just to lighten it.
Yeah.
I was visualizing at the beginning of that before it made me cry, mm-hmm. that her kids, when they hear this, will be in the back of her car rolling their eyes. Mom. No, I just think that was an absolutely beautiful story.
It was.
And that's the kind of thing that you want, that connection when someone passes. You want just, even if it's just one little one, that's all you want.
Sure.
It's like, I just need that one connection. And even though, I mean, of course you want more, but you would settle for one.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she got that, I think, is a really beautiful thing. I think that's beautiful.
You really couldn't ask for more. And I like how distinctive it was, where she was able to see the hand, you know, to yeah. be that clear, that obvious. It wasn't like, well, maybe that was just my imagination. You know, it was very distinct, and she knew exactly what it was.
And I absolutely, who knows what happens when you die, mm-hmm. but I absolutely think that was his way of letting her know that he was okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I don't know, maybe he watches out for her. Who knows how that all works? But I just think that was his way to connect,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I think that flag, and I do think that objects like that can bring that into the home.
Yeah.
I really do. But having that flag there, I think, was, and then her happening to move to sleep on the sofa, it just, that was beautiful.
When you have haunted objects that are brought into a house, is the individual like stuck or attached to the object, or is it more like they're attracted to the object? They know the
object. I don't
know.
And I wonder about something like that flag, because it was a very personal thing to him,
mm-hmm.
and probably something he was very proud of.
Sure.
And so putting it in a place of honor in her house, that brought her probably thinking a lot about him. And I wonder if it kind of opens you up to it a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know, after somebody dies, there's grief, you're shut down. And then you bring that into your home and you bring in a piece of your father, you bring in a piece of your loved one, whoever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Finger.
And I think that it kind of opens you up
yeah.
to that person again. And especially something like that, that's a very strong connection to him.
Where are you more likely to be haunted by? Is it more when you have an object that has a strong emotional connection to it, or a vial of the person's ashes on a necklace?
Oh my God, I just about spit my drink out.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting comparison, because one, you literally have remnants of that person. The other is a physical object that was manufactured somewhere. And
well, it made me think about the gift my coworker gave me recently.
Yeah.
Which is on another podcast.
That's on Office Horror Stories, which you totally have to listen to if you're not over there yet. Subscribe to Office Horror Stories.
A very inappropriate gift for a coworker that has to do with a necklace and a vial for ashes.
Oh my God, it's great.
It's bad. So that's why I almost spit my drink out. Yeah. But I kind of think it's the object.
Yeah.
Because I think that when somebody's dead, you're dead. And, you know, like, that's why it doesn't really matter to me what you do with me once I die. I'm dead. Like, if you want to cremate me, I think I want to go that route. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. I'm dead.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I know when my dad died, we had his ashes. I should say, my brother-in-law had him in his office for quite a while. And he said he found a lot of comfort in having them nearby. You know, they brought him peace. And
sure.
So I don't know. But, I mean, definitely, that's got a pretty strong attachment to your loved one.
Yeah.
You just having the ashes there.
When you think of, you know, and just really, if you look statistically at the ghost stories that we've had over the years, we have far more that involve an object that the person was closer to and then something kind of happening versus the person themselves or the ashes of the remains of the person then causing something. That's a very, it's a rare thing, quite honestly. We have more about cemeteries than we do someone having the urn of their loved one and then them haunting the house.
Because I only have all of the ashes for every pet I've ever had as an adult that died. So I have a little collection of them, but like, I don't feel, I have a lot of respect for them and I care. It just, you know, reminds me of my pet.
Sure.
But it doesn't feel morbid, but I certainly don't feel like my pet's here.
No, no. And I totally get the understanding where the feeling it's a feeling kind of, you know, closeness of closure, not supernatural, like they're hovering around the, you know, the urn, but just, you know, like I, you know, you're in possession of it. And I get that. That's, there's something to that. I think that's more of a, like a, you know, a human thing, a mental thing that you're a grieving type thing that you go through. But it's,
and I really don't want the ashes. It's, I don't really feel like. Like with my dad, I didn't really feel like I needed them.
Sure.
You know,
my parents surprised me a couple, probably a couple years ago now. And they're like, guess what we did? Like, I don't know. What did you do? We bought our burial plot at the cemetery. Okay. And we're in the same one, and not like a dual one, but like they bought one plot. It was like a 2-for-1 or something. It's probably like a radio remote going on with balloons and hot dogs.
Well, it makes sense. Just dig a little deeper for one.
Well, I'm like,
a little dirt and put the other one on top.
I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, we're going to get cremated and then we'll just, we'll put our ashes there. And
that makes sense.
That was news to me too, because I don't know, my whole, I don't know. We've in my family, we talked about this shit, like growing up. And it was always like, my mom was always very much, she's like, I don't want to be cremated. I think I just feel better about being buried. I'd rather be, you know, a zombie. That's what I would attribute it to. And so I myself feel that way. I don't want to be cremated. I want to be a zombie. I want to be buried in a casket so I can rise from the dead and freak the hell out of children. But they're so like, yeah, we're getting cremated and we're going to be in the same plot. I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, all these things that we talked about.
I'm dead. I wanted you to be zombies.
This is not what we planned. I totally planned on zombifying and doing the Thriller dance someday together.
That's just my plan.
Totally messes up. Now I got to find other people to do the dance, and we got to learn it before we're all dead. So, you know, it was just kind of like.
Well, then there's my mom who's got some secret burial information and a funeral policy. And I keep saying, at some point, you really should give me that. Do you know where it is? Let's quit just hypothetically talking about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's important.
Yeah.
That's a really important thing that your parents did. And there will be a time you'll be glad that you don't have any decisions to make. It's been made.
They're responsible. They always have been. And I appreciate that. I guess I was surprised by what the decision was more than anything. It wasn't making fun of them for doing it. It was more like, this is not at all what we've ever talked about doing ever.
I see you like sinking into the sofa with your arms crossed. Why would you do to be buried?
Damn it, you're not going to get burned. And it turned out it'll be like something like, and by the way, they bought the at-home cremation kit and you have to do it in your Whirlpool double oven. It's like it gets extra hot when you put this extra, you know, filament in there. It's like, this is not what you told me either. This is, I'm not supposed to do it like this, Mom. This is not right. It
doesn't feel right.
Now the turkey's going to taste really fucking weird at Christmas or at Thanksgiving because you were just in it. So, yeah. And I don't clean the oven well enough. So, yeah. What's that little smoky taste? That's grandma, kids. So, yeah. Be very awkward. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go over to our next letter. It says, I'm hoping you might have a few answers or suggestions for me. I'll start from the beginning. The previous house we lived in was 25 miles away. We lived there for years. There was finished attic space there that we used for storage. We had planned to make it a guest room, but never did because it was always cold, and we liked having the storage space. However, I always had an uneasy feeling when I was up there. My niece, who was 14 or 15 at the time, said she was there. She told me that there was a lady who was up there. She was dressed in 1800s attire, and she didn't mean any harm. I sometimes noticed the same feeling in the kitchen. On an odd note, I baked significantly better than I ever have when I lived in that house. Maybe it was the oven. There we go. This is just funny. This is how our show works. This shit just kind of happened. I did not pre-plan this. We have lived in our current house for a little over 2 years. The previous owner was pre-foreclosure when we obtained it. She'd been practicing witchcraft for some time. Hard to say for me how long. She was in her early 30s. One thing I noticed is that all around the house, there were what appeared to be purposely placed blackened handprints on doorways and near windows. They weren't completely obvious, but they were there. We painted and cleaned the house for a few weeks prior to moving in. And when we moved in, I noticed a more intense feeling like I had in our previous house, this attic in several areas of the house. We have the same finished attic type space in this house, which we use for storage, but there is a spare room up there. My niece, then 16, told me there were many different spirits upstairs and that bad timing or a bad thing happened there. We usually have a door to the upstairs closed and only use it when moving things in or out from storage. Last week, my husband and I slept upstairs for 3 nights while out-of-town relatives stayed in our room. The door was open the entire time. We had sex on the third night. I feel this has meaning for some reason. Since we returned downstairs, I've noticed that uneasy feeling several times around the house, particularly in the living room. I've noticed one of my dogs, a nearly 2-year-old female, staring near the hallway that exits the upstairs and enters the living room during the evenings. She looks as if something is interesting to her, as if there's a big bug crawling or another animal sitting there. That kind of look. The other dog, an older male, doesn't seem to notice anything. The other night, my husband fell asleep on the couch. Since he doesn't believe in ghosts, per se, he waited to see anything he could. But last night, he told me that he woke up suddenly and saw something hazy on top of him. And he felt a weight. He was weirded out, but not scared by it. 2 days prior to that was his stepdad's funeral. I feel he was passing through and just saying hi, and this was unrelated to the many other spirits in our house, but it pushed me to seek answers. Here's something else I wanted to throw in there, and that's why I thought sex had meaning. Since we've moved into the house and not prior, I've had odd health-related interferences with my ability to have sex often. I think there may be a relation there, simply because they are new and doctors think there's no medical reason for them. I've never felt threatened or worried about the spirits. I am, however, interested in hearing your take on the situation because I'm feeling a bit out of sorts. Well, you're in luck. Sex doctor Carol Hughes has all the answers.
Yeah, I lost a little bit at the very end there. So what's the problem with sex? Like,
well, since she's moved into the house, I guess from what I understand, she didn't get into too much detail, but I'm guessing maybe she's just not feeling that into it. Maybe
she ain't doing it.
Libido's a little bit lower than it used to be.
But they did it the one night.
They did it the one night. But it seems like the desire just may not be there, but there doesn't seem to be any other logical reason for that to be happening.
Well, yeah, if you feel like you have an audience sometimes.
Yeah. Anxiety can certainly play a big role in that if we're talking about just mental things.
Well, and you know, with women, if you got your mind on other things, like there's spirits in my house.
Yeah.
I think guys don't care. There could be spirits all around them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I'm going to finish up. But so I think with women, like, you know, and your mind's in a million places anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I could definitely see a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't anything medically.
No.
It was more just she's got this weird feeling about the house.
Yeah.
Here's what I would do. Go away on a weekend, like 3 or 4 day weekend, do some fun things, have some nice dinners, and then see what happens.
Are you implying they should have sex outside of their house?
I'm just saying, yes. I think there's ways you could test this. It's just an idea.
Or in the yard, in the backyard. Go to the backyard, get a nice lounger, and see what happens out back. See if the backyard is haunted. Let the neighbors know what's up. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, so could that be connected to all this? Yes, it very well could be. I'd be concerned just with overall feeling beyond just the sex thing. I'd be taking a closer look at how is she overall feeling mentally. Is there any sort of depression or anything like that kind of setting in? Because then that could have something to do with attachment or something else that's kind of weighing on her. And that happens slowly. You know, depression itself without paranormal happens slowly in many cases. But that sort of thing could be all, you know, playing together with the house. So best of luck.
I think there's any number. I mean, it would be with that story alone, it would be really hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. Our phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go over to a caller. Hi.
Hey, Tony. It's Summer in Buffalo. I just wanted to call. Well, this is fresh in my mind. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I reached over to grab my cell phone. And the phone wasn't on the table next to the bed where it normally is. So well, that's okay. Maybe it just fell down. And I reached down and I followed the wire from the wall, you know. And I get to the end of the wire and I touch the end and everything. And I hear my husband in the other room and he's kind of stirring. So I get up and I'm like, well, that's weird. I can't FM my phone, but I heard him, so I went to check on him, and he was like shaking, and he's got a fever, and he's coming down with the flu or something. So I helped him out and got him settled and took his temp, and he's got a temperature and stuff like that. But that's not the main reason I was calling, because when I got him all set up and I got him some medicine and stuff like that, I went back to the bedroom and I shook the pillows and, you know, just shook the blanket trying to find it. And it's not, you know, a huge deal. I can live without my phone, but I use it for my alarm clock to get up for work in the morning. So I really needed to at least find it. And I even went into my daughter's room. She was to see if maybe she grabbed it in the middle of the night for whatever reason. She normally doesn't do that, but you know, who knows? And I looked under the bed, everywhere. And so my husband, who was still kind of awake, he goes, well, let me call your phone. And he calls my phone, and I go in the bedroom, and I look down, and it's under the bed, still connected to the charger, which I just literally touched not 15 minutes prior to that. And it was completely plugged in, 100%, and it was exactly 3 a.m. I know that other callers and stuff like that have mentioned weird stuff happening at 3 a.m. But I promise you, I looked up and down that bed and shook everything out, and I touched the end of the charger. There was nothing connected to that wire, because that was the first place, you know, you look if you can't find your phone. Sometimes it's attached to the charger. It was less than 6 inches from I would have seen that. It was really odd, really strange, but I don't know. Maybe somebody was getting me up so I could tend to my husband because he was sick and needed some help. Either way, it's just a weird thing that happened that I can't explain, and I just wanted to call and let you guys know what was going on. Have a good night. Thanks. Bye.
kind of in line with those stories where, like, and then I couldn't find the keys, and then they're just sitting on the bed and things like that. We're like, how did that physically happen?
But I like her theory about something had to wake her up so she could go check on her husband,
mm-hmm.
who ended up being really sick.
Yeah.
And he needed her. But me, I have a power strip near my nightstand, and I have like Alexa plugged in. I got a computer plugged in. I got like all this stuff. So I could see me picking up any number of wires and being like, oh, this my phone should be attached to that one, and it's not.
Sure.
And really, that's the one for my whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I did have that a while back in the middle of the night. I knocked my phone off of the nightstand, and that's it. And I don't have an alarm clock or anything in my room, so I don't have any idea what time it is. So later in the night, I went to see, and I'm like, oh, it's not there. And I look around on the floor. And when I woke up in the morning, it was literally, I have a queen size bed. It was halfway under the bed, so it fell on a carpet. And how did it get halfway under my bed? And I had looked all over for it.
Well, remember, your house is not haunted. So
my house is not haunted.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So can't be anything like that.
But I kind of think the connection there is that her husband needed her.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that she woke up and it was all about something else.
Mm-hmm.
But then she really needed to be awake for an entirely other reason.
Yeah. I think there was something to do with that there, definitely. I wonder how many times we talk about technology and ghosts trying to use it to communicate. How many are picking up phones today, whether it be an Android product or an Apple product, and they're like, oh, this is great. I know my energy. I can manipulate this to communicate. And they get to it, and they're like, how the fuck does this work?
Right.
You know, because
what's her log on?
Especially this, if
I don't know her password.
If they died like 10 years ago or before, where this stuff didn't exist to the place where it is today. I mean, if you had no idea how any of this stuff worked and you just picked it up and you died 20 years ago, you'd have no clue. Like, what? I do what? How? What are these things? You know, I know they are kind of intuitive, but that's because we've taken baby steps into them. I wonder how often that is the case where it's like, I was going to totally tell them that I love them and it's not their fault that I died, but I can't unlock the fucking phone. So
exactly. So I think I'll turn on the TV instead.
You get the guilt forever. I hope the staticky TV gets the message across, assholes. You know, probably.
That would be my mother. Oh, well, fine, Carol.
Yeah. He's just like, okay, that's all that, and that's how that ended. So I think about these things. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. And that's going to wrap up today's episode of the program. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person, an EPP as we call them. Just go to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Sign up in either place. $5 a month gets you access to all the advanced episodes, commercial-free, EPP bonus episodes, and more. Ghostpodcast.com, patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to A Real Ghost Stories Online.